The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program, WMKV, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS, the Lakota Local School District, or staff and management. The information and advice presented are educational in nature and not intended to be taken as specific legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Always consult with your own legal, accounting, or other professional before making any investment. Welcome to Real Life Real Estate Investing, a show to help you gain financial freedom by investing in real estate. Brought to you by the Real Estate Investors Association of Cincinnati and the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing on WMKV, WLHS, and the Maple Knoll Radio Network. And now your host, Vina Jones Cox.
All right. Well, I am not Vina Jones Cox. I'm Scott Ellsworth, guest hosting today. We have a good program for you. This is really good. Before we get started, I do want to let you know that if you have questions, you can call 877-772-9658, or you can also email vinaradio@gmail.com. That's vinaradio@gmail.com. So before I introduce our speaker, I just want to let you know about two things that are going to be coming up really quick. Good things for you to grow your real estate investments and grow your wealth. One is a Saturday workshop this Saturday, 4:27. The topic is going to be how to use AI to do more real estate. So a great topic. AI is just booming. And you'll go, you want to go to CincinnatiRIA.com. CincinnatiRIA, R-E-I-A.com. And then also on next Thursday, so not this Thursday, but on 5-2, we are going to have a really special guest who's going to speak at Cincinnati RIA's live in-person meeting, and that will be Jeffrey Taylor. He's better known as Mr. Landlord, so he's coming. Just mounds of advice on how to run your business, your rental business, much more profitably, taking it to the next level. So you can register at that. You've got to register for that. CincinnatiRIA.com. Again, CincinnatiRIA.com. And it's going to be free to members and guests. So definitely do that. So it is my privilege to have a good friend on the call today. That is John Bowens. He's been with Equity Trust in the financial services for nearly 20 years, and he is personally a real estate investor. He is just a trove of knowledge. And today we are going to be talking about UBIT and UDFI. So these are topics that a lot of people seem to hear the letters, the acronyms, but they don't really understand it. So hopefully John is going to shed some light on that. How you doing, John?
I'm doing well, Scott. Thanks so much for having me.
All right. So let's just start off with some basics. So what exactly is UBIT and UDFI, and why do they exist?
Yeah, it's a great question, Scott. And I find doing this for nearly 20 years, there's a lot of misconceptions out there. There's a lot of bad information or sometimes misleading information with respect to unrelated business income tax, and as you said, unrelated debt finance income tax, specifically as it relates to retirement accounts. Now, UBIT, UDFI, it's quite broad because it also does include not just retirement accounts, but nonprofit entities. And that's really when it got its start, back in the 50s, even before IRAs even came into existence, because IRAs didn't come into existence until about 1974 under the ERISA legislation. So its roots actually date back to about the 50s. And the reason why it came about was because the government was trying to shut off loopholes that nonprofit entities were taking advantage of, where they were engaged in ongoing trades and businesses that were regularly carried on, and they had a unfair advantage over their commercial taxpaying counterparts. So to break it down for you, Scott, and answer your question, what is UBIT? So it stands for Unrelated Business Income Tax. And then you'll also hear a variation of UBIT, and this is under Section 511 to 514 of the tax code, by the way, and it's unrelated debt financed income tax. So UBIT and UDFI, 511 to 514, UDFI specifically 514, UDFI stands for unrelated debt financed income tax. And so that's speaking specifically to instances where a retirement account or nonprofit entity has debt against it to acquire real estate or improve real estate. So let's break it down. What I'd like to do, Scott, is explain it over the course of three different scenarios that you might encounter. And I'm not going to speak specifically to nonprofit entities here. I'm just going to speak specifically to IRAs, 401ks, and other retirement accounts, because that's ultimately my focus and where I specialize. And so when I say IRA, when I say 401k, I'm just going to say retirement account. So when I say retirement account, think IRA, 401k, pension. It could be a Roth IRA, SEP IRA, simple IRA, any type of retirement account. It could even be a health savings account, because you could actually self-direct an HSA into real estate and private entities as well. So there are three scenarios that folks want to be aware of. The first is if your IRA or, again, retirement account is engaged in a trade or business that's regularly carried on. So again, that's a trade or business that's regularly carried on. And I'll talk more specifically about that in just a moment. The second instance would be where your IRA or 401k is acquiring a property, or maybe your IRA or 401k or retirement account already has a property, and then you go to a non-recourse lender and you borrow money. So if you're acquiring property or you're borrowing money for the improvement of property, you have unrelated business income tax that you have to address. Or in the context here of debt finance real estate, we call that unrelated debt financed income tax. Now, for those that are a little bit more experienced here, you're probably thinking, well, wait a second, I heard that there was an exemption. And you are right in some circumstances. So qualified plans, 401ks, pensions, known as defined benefit plans, profit sharing plans, so not IRAs, but 401ks, there is an exemption for unrelated business income tax as it relates specifically to debt finance real estate. So it's not all UBIT. It's just specifically UBIT as it relates to a 401k borrowing money to acquire real estate or improve on property. And then last but not least, Scott, is if an IRA or 401k or other retirement account leases personal property. So personal property being, you know, think a blender or a washer, dryer, or a piece of equipment, or an RV, a plane, right? So if it's personal property and you're leasing that personal property, the IRA or 401k can have unrelated business income tax. Now, right, you hear unrelated business taxable income. So that's the income that is being generated from the activity. And then that income can be subject to the unrelated business income tax. Now, keep in mind that there could be enough write-offs or enough losses where you actually don't show enough positive income and therefore incur unrelated business income tax. So this is why it's always important for folks to, you know, do the math, work with their CPA or on their own, actually pencil this out and determine, does it make sense? I always let people know, don't fear UBIT. In one of the presentations that we have upcoming here, I'm going to be talking about how UBIT can be your friend. So it's not always a negative when you're paying taxes, because if the returns and the opportunity are significant enough, sometimes it makes sense to actually pay some tax in order to advance the production of your IRA.
Okay. Well, John, we're going to take a break, and we will be back after that. All right. We are back. Remember to call 877-772-9658 if you have a question, or you can email vinaradio@gmail.com. So, John, let's just talk about the actual tax. Like, how is that calculated? Is it like a flat amount? How do they calculate the tax?
Yeah, so the tax, of course, is being paid by the retirement account. So using those three scenarios before, let's say the IRA or 401k is engaged in a trade or business that's regularly carried on. Now, what could that mean? Well, that could mean that your IRA is actually owning a business directly, and that business is not paying corporate tax. It's a pass-through entity. So think LLC, limited partnership. And that income is ordinary business income and therefore subject to unrelated business income tax. So let's just use the example of a coin-driven laundromat, right? If your IRA owned a coin-driven laundromat, inevitably, that's going to be considered a trader business that's regularly carried on. So let's say you generate net income in that business, and again, it's not being taxed as a corporation, it's passed through. Because if it was taxed as a corporation, then you're paying corporate tax, and the income will likely be dividend income to the IRA. And in that instance, you're going to fall under a UBIT exemption under 512, not be subject to taxes. But if it's an LLC pass-through, and let's say you have $100,000 in net income, well, you're going to have to take that $100,000 in income, and you're going to have to report that on the tax return called a 990T, 990T. That's the actual tax return that you would file and claim that income. So if it's $100,000, you then, and it's ordinary business income, then you're going to apply that to the trust and estate tax schedule. Now, the trust and estate tax schedule, it's an accelerated tax schedule. So it's not like the ordinary income tax schedule. It's not like the corporate tax rate. You'll actually find that once you get to income of $15,201 in tax year 2024, you're subject to a 37% tax rate.
Ooh, that's
so it
a
gets
lot.
To 37, yeah, it gets to 37% pretty quick. Now, that can be looked at as a negative. However, it's also important to understand that after that tax is paid, you really want to look at what is your return on investment after that tax is paid, because the remaining amount that's left in your IRA is either going to continue to grow tax deferred in the case of a traditional IRA, or in the case of a Roth IRA, which is funded with after-tax dollars, everything grows tax-free. And then when you take the money out, you pay 0% tax. So for some investors, their strategy is to actually invest in opportunities that might trigger this UBIT, but eventually they get to a point where they have enough tax-free compounding growth in their Roth IRA where they don't need to go out and do transactions that trigger this unrelated business income tax.
Yeah, because it really seems to me that they're somebody who they want to buy real estate in their IRA or their retirement plan, they're not going to have. I mean, some people would, but if you can, you know, you can only buy one property, that sort of limits your growth, and the contributions are relatively small you can make to an IRA, not to a 401k. But it would be really hard to do it without debt.
That's correct. We see in a number of instances where individuals are using their retirement accounts to buy real estate with leverage, or their IRAs are investing in real estate syndications. And those real estate syndications are generally limited liability companies, so you have pass-through income. And when those properties held in those LLCs, again, these syndications, when those properties have debt against the property, you have unrelated business income tax that passes through. So it's not a negative. And to give you an example of this, I have a client, his name is Tim, and he's from Texas, and he bought a house on owner financing. He put $5,000 down, and the seller carried $50,000 in financing. He used his Roth IRA. So he was about 91% leveraged. He needed about $86,000 for the transaction, but he didn't have $86,000 in his Roth IRA. But he had enough for a $5,000 down payment and then the $30,000 and some change in rehab. And so he did have the property encumbered by debt, and he did have to address unrelated business income tax. Now, the numbers, the way they worked out is when he sold the property, he made about $39,000 in profit, and 91% of that profit was subject to this unrelated business income tax, also known as unrelated debt financed income tax. So when it was all said and done, he paid taxes on about $35,000 and some change, which came out to be about $14,000 in taxes. And so when it was all said and done, his Roth IRA still made $25,000 tax-free. His return on investment was still over 70%. And now he's at a point in his journey with growing his Roth IRA where he doesn't need to take on debt anymore. He's focusing on private money lending secured by property where he's just generating interest income, holding rental properties outright in his IRA. And in those instances, he has no unrelated debt financed income tax. Now, that brings up the point of the qualified plan, the solo 401k, defined benefit plan, pension plan. Those qualified plans, in most instances, are going to fall under the UBIT exemption under the specific debt finance section. And so if a 401k or defined benefit plan, other qualified plan, buys a property directly with a loan, as long as that loan is structured properly, and in most cases these loans are structured properly, then there's no unrelated business income tax. And same would go for if you were investing in like a real estate syndication, an LLC or limited partnership that owns real estate with debt against it. If you're doing that in a qualified plan, then you would effectively be exempt from the unrelated debt financed income tax. Now, keep in mind with real estate, particularly commercial real estate, let's say, you have depreciation deductions. And so the depreciation can offset or will offset the income. And so you need to calculate your net income to determine if you even have any unrelated business income tax exposure. What might happen is you actually stack up losses over multiple years. So you save your K-1s, you stack up your losses over multiple years, and then those losses can offset future gains.
So you've basically, Tina had a question, which you've for the most part answered. So her question was, if you're investing in a self-directed 401k instead of the IRA, does it trigger UBIT? And you said, no, it doesn't. So why is, so I'll just, instead of opening up an IRA, I'll just open up a solo 401k. I can just do that, right? I work for a company, so I can just set up my own solo 401k, right?
In some cases, you can. If you are self-employed, you have earned income, meaning income that you're paying ordinary income taxes on, as well as payroll taxes, Medicare and Social Security. And then, of course, we also have to have the assumption that you don't have any employees. So if you're going to open a solo 401k, you can't have any employees, you got to have earned income. If you meet the qualifications, absolutely. So the problem solved and how you do that is you have a business structured where you are actually paying yourself earned income. And then from there, you can move money from your tax-deferred savings account into that solo 401k. Then you can invest in debt finance real estate, and you have no unrelated business income tax. Now, you got to, again, qualify for that. And it might not be a solo 401k. If you have a business with employees, maybe you actually have to set up a 401k and offer that benefit to those employees as well.
So it really does. So if I get this straight, so if I invest in a syndication, if I do with my IRA and they've got debt, then I'm going to pay UBIT based on, the percent of debt that that investment has, right?
That's correct. Yep.
And then, but with a 401k, I wouldn't have to pay taxes on that debt financed real estate. So it's better, if you can do it, to do it through a 401k and not through an IRA. But even if you do, your comment was it can still be worth it, right? Except you just got to calculate what your return is with that.
That's correct. You really have to, there's trade-offs. And you have to analyze, is it easy enough for me to open a solo 401k to accomplish that goal? Or am I better off just keeping it as an IRA and managing through paying the unrelated business income tax? And with commercial real estate, you might have enough depreciation and show losses and then again be able to stack up those losses to offset future gains. And keep in mind that the long-term capital gains tax rate for unrelated business income tax is actually different. It's not the 37%. For most people, it's 20%. So once you get to over $15,000 in income, the long-term capital gains tax rate is actually only 20%, not 37%. So a little bit more favorable tax rate there. And you did bring up a good point, Scott, for everybody, is that when you do a deal with your IRA and there's debt against the property, you're not paying taxes on 100% of the net profit. You're only paying taxes on the percentage of the profit that's allocable to the debt finance percentage of the property. So, for example, if I bought a single-family rental property for $100,000 and my IRA borrowed $50,000 to acquire that property or improve that property, it's called acquisition indebtedness. And there's a calculation that goes into play, but ultimately using those numbers, it's 50%. So that means that only 50% of my net profit is subject to this unrelated business income tax, or again, as we say, unrelated debt financed income tax. So if you have enough deductions, if it's a buy and hold transaction, you may show enough deductions where you don't necessarily have to worry about the unrelated business income tax. You still likely have to file a 990T every year and report that and maybe pay a little bit of tax. But ultimately, it's important to calculate the return on investment after you pay that tax bill. A great example of it is I had a client that came to one of our seminars here in Cleveland, and smart guy, and he understood the calculations associated with it. And he was looking at his situation. He said, okay, I have an IRA, and I don't qualify for a solo 401k right now, so I can't take advantage of that. But I have an IRA, and I have enough money in my IRA to buy one rental property. That's it, only one rental property. But if I took on debt, I would have the ability to buy two, maybe three rental properties with my self-directed IRA. And even after the taxes were paid, the UBIT tax, he was able to calculate that his return on investment, his overall yield, was higher. So it actually made sense for him to file the 990T every year, pay a little bit of tax, because ultimately his cash-on-cash return across his entire retirement portfolio was much greater. And he had diversification. Instead of only owning one rental property, he has three rental properties. By the way, I should mention, Scott, that when you sell the properties, let's say you pay off all the debt, and then you wait 12 months and a day and you sell those properties, you no longer have any unrelated business income tax. And at that point, there's also no recapture depreciation because you didn't have debt on the property for the prior 12 months. So you pay off the debt of the properties, you hold them for, you know, call it a year and a half, you sell them, and you have no long-term UBIT tax. You have no unrelated business income tax at all.
Okay, John, we're going to take a break here in a second. So just remember, call 1-877-772-9658 or email vinaradio@gmail.com with your questions. We'll be back after this. All right, welcome back. Scott Ellsworth here with John Bowens. I just wanted to announce remind people of two events coming up really quick. Saturday, 4:27, how to use AI to do more real estate. Great topic, AI, and how that works in your real estate investment. And then for those who have buy and hold properties, they're housing providers, Jeffrey Taylor, better known as Mr. Landlord, is coming to Cincinnati Area's in-person meeting. That'll be Thursday, 5-2. And for that, you can go to CincinnatiRIA.com. You can also do that for Saturday's workshop, CincinnatiRIA.com. And the event with Jeffrey Taylor is free to members and guests. So encourage you to attend. Hey, John, so I had a thought since you said that, hey, we have this property, we bought it, we depreciated it. Another strategy I'm thinking within this is, what if I did a cost segregation study on that property, got extensive depreciation? Now, we don't have a lot of time to talk cost segregation today, but it's a way to accelerate depreciation, more tax deductions. It seems that would almost eliminate for sure years and years and years and years of UBIT, and then pay the thing off with other money before you sell it, and you avoid any tax at all.
Well, that's a good thought. So traditionally in real estate, especially commercial real estate, usually a cost segregation study is performed. And Scott, I know you're very, very cerebral of how that works and how that's performed within your organization. And that works very, very effectively for someone that's not using a retirement account, because you can take advantage of the bonus depreciation. And, you know, eventually at some point or another, that would get recaptured to a degree, but then maybe you do a 1031 exchange, or, you know, you buy another property. The problem is with an IRA, you actually don't get the accelerated depreciation. You can't recognize that.
Oh.
And I will tell you that a lot of folks in the industry are getting that wrong. A lot of folks that are preparing K-1s, they don't understand the tax code as it relates to IRAs and retirement plans. again, 401ks, we don't necessarily need to worry about it. So K-1 says, you know, there's debt on the property, but for a 401k, it doesn't matter because you're exempt. But with an IRA, you actually have to look at the straight line depreciation.
So there is that. There's no accelerated.
That's correct. Yep.
Many people don't know that.
Right. So. Now, Scott, one thing I should mention is an interesting strategy. A lot of people aren't thinking about this. A 1031 exchange. So can you do a 1031 exchange in your IRA? Now, let's not get that confused with, hey, could I take an asset that I own now and put it into my IRA when it goes from non-IRA to IRA? No, you can't do that.
Right.
But if you bought a property with your IRA account, and let's say it was a buy and hold, a rental property, let's just call it a single family home, and you're paying off the debt, but you still have debt on the property, but you've recognized significant appreciation. And now you want to sell that property and you want to, within 45 days, identify your replacement properties. And then within a certain number of days, you want to close, just like a traditional 1031 exchange. You can actually defer the UBIT capital gain into a new property. Now, Scott, think about this. A lot of people aren't thinking about this. When you do a 1031 exchange outside of your IRA, all you're doing is kicking the can down the road, right?
Right.
Now, maybe the goal is to eventually die and take advantage of step-up basis. But with an IRA, once you pay off the debt in its entirety and then you wait 12 months and a day and then sell, you pay no tax. There's no recapture depreciation. So what if you did this in a Roth IRA? What if you bought a single-family home now in a Roth IRA, it appreciated, you eventually roll that into another property, okay, through a 1031, and you keep doing this and you keep buying more properties, and then eventually in your longer-term retirement years, let's assume you have enough cash to pay off all the debt, now you own free and clear rental properties in a tax-free Roth IRA, and eventually when you sell those properties, you pay 0% capital gains tax, and if you keep the properties, all of your cash flow is 100% tax-free. I have a client right now, husband and wife, they have 14 free and clear rental properties in their Roth IRAs, and they also do private money lending with their Roth IRAs. So because they have no debt on any of the properties, and it's all passive rental income, and the loans that they're making from their IRAs to other investors to flip houses, all of that income is interest income. It's all tax-free in their Roth IRA. They're generating over $200,000 in tax-free profits back into their Roth IRAs every single year. So I think it is important, Scott, for folks to know that when it comes to unrelated business income tax, UBIT applies, again, under those three scenarios. An ongoing trader business, you have the debt finance real estate with the exemption of 401ks, and then leasing of personal property.
So
when does UBIT not exist? Under 512, it's very clear. Rental income, so passive income, rental income, interest income, capital gains, let's call it long-term capital gains, royalties, dividends, that's an important one. Dividends are an important one. And so that's all passive income that flows into your IRA. So as long as you don't have any debt finance real estate in your IRA, if you just have interest income coming in, rental income coming in, you don't have to worry about unrelated business income tax. Like the couple that I mentioned, they have 14 free and clear rental properties in their Roth IRA, and that's all passive tax-free profits going back into their Roth every year.
So John, is really, I think it's important for our listeners. There are some strategies that work that you don't think about, like 1031s in a retirement account. And there are some strategies that don't work, like accelerated depreciation. So there are, you know, you've got to seek the right advice, for this. And there's a lot of folks that, like you said, John, they don't get it right. And you can really get yourself into some trouble by not doing it correctly. And even you pointed out, syndicators need to be able to, you know, if they're using a cost segregation study, right, somehow you've got to know that because you can't take that cost segregation piece. Accelerated.
That's exactly correct.
Let's go to a couple questions. One, this isn't really regarding UBIT, but it is related to this. So Joe asks, does a Roth IRA hold real estate directly within the Roth IRA, or through an entity like an LLC that is outside of the Roth IRA but is owned by the Roth IRA?
So that is, I need to process that a little bit more. Can you say that one more time, Scott?
Well, what he's asking is, hey, if I've got a Roth IRA, do I own the entity directly by the Roth or in an LLC that's owned by the Roth? In this case, I would assume it's a single member LLC, or do I just own it directly by my Roth?
Okay. So whether the Roth IRA owns the property directly or the Roth IRA is the 100% owner of an LLC and then that LLC owns the property, which is very commonly done within the self-directed IRA world, where the IRA owns an LLC and the LLC owns the property. A lot of people do that for asset protection. You don't have to do that. You can have the IRA own the property directly. Either way, it's going to be treated the same because, remember, the LLC is a pass-through entity. It's not a corporation. So the LLC is going to have all the income pass through. If there is any debt on that property, then that unrelated business income tax or unrelated debt finance income tax is just going to pass right through that LLC, just like if you were investing in, let's say, a real estate syndication with multiple other partners.
So that's good because we obviously, Joe brings up a valid point. I mean, the fact is if something happens to that property and you get sued, I'm not an attorney. John's not an attorney. Seek legal advice, but we obviously want some limited protection. There's never unlimited liability, but limited liability protection. So that they have less of a chance that they're going to take all of your retirement assets and all that you've worked so hard for, right?
That's correct.
So this is another UBIT question, which is a little bit different from the actual hard real estate. So Tina asks, if we lend money using an IRA and we do it regularly, 5-10 times a year, is that considered a trade or business that I need to pay UBIT on?
That's a very common question. It's great. What I will tell you is, generally speaking, no. I suppose if you were doing hundreds and you were running a hard money lending business totally out of your IRA, maybe there's an argument there that it's a trader business that's regularly carried on. But generally speaking, private money lending, that is passive income. So you have multiple loans in your IRA, just like maybe multiple properties without any debt financing, and that is all passive income. That's interest income. That's rental income. It's all income passing directly to that IRA.
Well, so that really, you know, it brings up a point. I mean, and you're basically stating the case that, hey, I've got a loan, I've lent money, but I also, you know, buy stock and things like that, and those aren't considered a business, even if I bought and trade stock daily, right? Same type of thing.
That's correct. I have heard, you know, the day trading.
Oh, that is.
I've heard some tax attorneys talk about how, you know, you can do quite a bit, but I've also heard of certain brokerage firms actually shutting people off from doing too much day trading.
Oh, wow.
So that gets a little bit more in the gray area. But Scott, the path that you're going down in that question is an interesting one. There's something called a blocker corporation you'll hear used in the industry. Now, it can be a little bit more costly to structure, but this is where you want to look at, okay, what's the cost to structure this versus the tax savings, right? And if the tax savings are great enough, it might make sense to do this. So let's go all the way back to the very beginning of UBIT, the ongoing trader business, the trader business that's regularly carried on. So a lot of people look at this and say, wait a second, John, I've been investing in publicly traded stocks for a lot of years. I never had to deal with UBIT. Aren't those businesses that are regularly carried on? Well, yes, they are. However, most public companies are corporations, with the exception of master limited partnerships, but that's super rare now. For the most part, any publicly traded company, so you're using your IRA to invest in the stock market, those are corporations. They pay corporate tax. And then the income passes through as dividend income. Now, dividend income is passive income. Dividend income to the IRA is not subject to taxation. That's why when you invest in publicly traded stocks, You don't have to worry about capital gains. You don't have to worry about the dividends. It's all tax exempt in your retirement account. Even better with a Roth IRA, it's all tax free. So what if, take that same concept, what if on a much smaller scale, you formed a corporation, your IRA was the, let's say, 100% owner of the corporation, and then that corporation is going to pay a 21% federal corporate tax rate, and then whatever your applicable state tax rate is. Some folks on the call might have a corporate state tax rate, some may not, depending on the state that they're doing business in and that they live in. And so you take this corporation, you pay 21% corporate tax, and then your income flows through as dividend income to your IRA. So instead of paying a 37% UBIT tax rate under the estate and trust tax schedule, you pay a 21% tax rate.
That's a good idea.
So you have about 16% tax savings there. This is known as a blocker corporation. Now, this is where I always add the disclaimer in, and Scott, I know you can appreciate this. You know, don't try this at home, right?
Right.
You want to make sure you work with a qualified professional. There are attorneys out there that understand and are fully cerebral of how this works. There are CPAs out there that are cerebral of how all this works. So make sure you have your financial team in place. Make sure you have a good attorney that can draft the document for you. Make sure you have a good CPA to handle the tax preparation that's necessary. Okay. But that's an interesting strategy for somebody that maybe they want to, let's say, flip multiple houses. Maybe they want to do some wholesale transactions. You got to be careful with the prohibited transaction rules. That's another issue. But ultimately, if you structure this the right way, you can start creating a significant amount of profit in your retirement plan, and it's all treated as dividend income.
All right. Well, so we'd like everybody to, if you got questions, call 1-877-772-9658 or email vinoradio@gmail.com if you have questions, and we'll be back with John right after this. All right. Welcome back. Scott Ellsworth here, your guest host, along with John Bowens, and we're talking about UBIT, UDFI, and I have a caller, Clinton. And Clinton, what's your question?
I think you might have covered this a little bit, but if let's say that I already own a rental property free and clear, but I want to, instead of borrowing against it and buying another rental property, can I like purchase it in my Roth IRA and then buy other rental properties?
You're going to buy the rental properties in your IRA?
Do I have to do that, or should I just loan myself the money to buy the properties in my real estate LLC?
Yeah, so I'll let John handle some prohibited transaction stuff.
Yeah. Okay. So good question, though. Great question. So where you're going is the prohibited transaction rules. And so you have to understand that under 4975 of the tax code, you are a disqualified person to your IRA, as your spouse is, as your children and parents, so people up and down the family tree, your businesses. And so you wouldn't be able to loan money to your IRA. Even if your IRA, let's say, was in an LLC, and then you were going to be loaning money to that LLC, it would actually be considered a prohibited transaction. So you have to have cash in the IRA in order to be able to go out and consummate the transaction. Now, your IRA can take on debt. Your IRA could potentially partner with another investor, call that investor a financial friend. You know, a good example is I have two clients that they did a fix and flip transaction. And investor A, he only had about $13,000 and some change in his Roth IRA. They did a $105,000 fix and flip deal. Investor A with his $13,000 and some change did a joint venture with investor B. Investor B brought in about $91,000. When they sold the property, they made a $68,000 profit, and they split the profits 50-50. $34,000 went back to investor A's Roth IRA. So he grew his Roth IRA from $13,000 and some change to over $47,000, and that was tax-free. Now, I will add the caveat on that is you got to be careful you don't do too many flips. Because if you do too many flips in your IRA, now that can be viewed as a trade or business that's regularly carried on. And it's a very gray area. So I can't tell you a specific number that's going to trigger UBIT. The rule of thumb that's used in the industry quite commonly is to not do more than two of those short-term flips. And if you have, and it's relative to profit. So if you have a deal that's highly profitable, you might only want to do one of those deals in 1 year. So hopefully that answered the question and gave you a little bit more context in terms of different strategies.
Does it answer, Clinton?
I think what I'm trying to do is I want to borrow money from my Roth IRA. Can I just?
You can't do that.
How do I? You can't do that. Even if I said I'm borrowing the money to renovate a rental property that I currently own.
No. Prohibited.
Yeah, that's a prohibited transaction. So your IRA lending money to yourself. And I would also encourage you to think through, you know, does it make sense to do something like that? You know, the IRA, the Roth IRA in particular, is such a highly tax-advantaged tool, compounding interest in the absence of taxation. So the key is how to do deals directly in that IRA account. So that way, all of your growth, all of your profits can flow back into that Roth IRA tax-free.
And Clinton, there's one thing that, again, we're not going to get in deep into prohibited, but if you do what you suggested, your whole, let's say you had $1 million IRA, that thing totally blows up, and now you've got to pay tax. It's all distributed. It's like getting $1 million distribution from your IRA. You do not want it. It's just, you just can't do it.
Okay.
So,
all right.
Good. Yeah, thanks. But good questions. Thank you. Thanks. Hey, John, I had a thought. So you tell me, so just answer me a question. I have another question. So if my IRA just has a way of borrowing money, by the way, too, when an IRA borrows money, you personally cannot guarantee the debt of the IRA, correct?
That's correct. So when your IRA borrows money, it has to be on what's called a non-recourse basis. And the reason why is because the prohibited transaction rules say that if an IRA account owner borrows money, their IRA borrows money, and they sign a personal guarantee, it's a prohibited transaction. So you have to find a non-recourse lender. And there are non-recourse lenders out there. There are lenders, bank lenders nationwide that will loan on single-family or multi-family long-term buy and hold transactions. And then there are some lenders out there that will do a non-recourse loan for like a short-term fix and flip type transaction. So
gotcha.
You just want to go out to the market and find someone that's willing to do that and underwrite a loan and not require you to sign a personal guarantee. Now, I think the question actually started to come up before. Keep in mind that when you're lending money with your self-directed retirement account, so if I'm using my self-directed IRA and I'm making a loan to someone, I can require that borrower to sign a personal guarantee because my IRA is the lender, not the borrower. So it's okay for me to lend money to another person as long as it's not their IRA. Let's just say it's an LLC or it's an individual and they're going to flip a house. So my IRA loans money to that individual, and yes, I, of course, can ask them to sign a personal guarantee.
So the other thing is, I mean, there are lenders out there, as John said, that will do this. Now, typically, you got to understand, they're not going to lend you 80% loan to value because remember, those lenders are lending you money and they have no guarantee from anybody except your IRA that it's going to be paid back. So they're going to probably about 50-60%. Isn't that about what you've seen, John?
Yes. So I have seen some lenders will go as far as 75%.
Okay.
But generally, you're right. Generally, it's going to be, you know, 50 to 60, 65%. Of course, they want more money down. It's an asset-based loan. Generally, lenders are going to look at, do you have enough cash reserves in the IRA? Some will do between 15 to 20% ratio, meaning if you bought a property for $100,000, you're going to need about $15,000 to $20,000 in cash, or if it's in stocks and mutual funds, that generally is okay as well because you can easily liquidate those positions.
Right.
But you're going to need to have some reserves in your IRA. That way, if there's a vacancy, that lender feels comfortable that you're going to be able to still meet your obligation.
That is a good point. So we have a few minutes left because that's important. A lot of people don't have those reserves, even outside their IRA for their outside of IRA investments. So you need to definitely have them inside your retirement account. So one thing about the debt, let's say I had 5 real estate properties and they were all debt free And I went to one of the lenders who said, hey, I'll lend 50% loan to value. Let's say each one was worth $100,000. And that lender said, I'll lend you $250,000. If I lend that $250,000, if I borrow that $250,000, does that now create debt-financed real estate?
So you have an individual that is lending your IRA money, correct?
Right, and they want collateral.
Property that you already own.
Right, that I've already owned. So I didn't acquire it. I didn't improve it. It wasn't to improve the properties. Are they going to do that? Does that still end up with UBIT?
You do. What's interesting about that is if your IRA borrows money, the collateral is a property that you own in your IRA, of course. It's non-recourse, so it's the collateral of that property. What you do with that cash that goes into your IRA, ultimately the income from what you do with that cash is going to be subject to UBIT. So, for example, I've had clients that they propose that, okay, I have this property, I own it free and clear in my IRA, and I could go out and get a non-recourse loan and pull out $40,000. And now I got $40,000 back in my IRA, and I can take that $40,000 and I can go buy cryptocurrency. Well, I'm not going to say don't do that, but you're going to have to understand that you're still going to have
UBIT. You still have UBIT. Gotcha.
Now, what a lot of folks will do is they will make investments in the same sector. What I mean by that is real estate. So if my IRA owns a property and I do call it a refinance type loan, non-recourse, I pull out, let's say, $50,000. I would then want to look at potentially taking that $50,000 and actually going out and buying another rental property.
Right.
So now I have two rental properties, and I have a non-recourse loan on one of those properties, or maybe I have a non-recourse loan on both properties.
John, I had to cut you off. We have to wrap it up. Maybe we'll have to do a part two of this some point. So I want to remind everybody the two events coming up this Saturday, 4/27. Go to CincinnatiRIA.com, AI, and the Jeffrey Taylor on 5/2. So hope to see you then. In the meantime, invest well.